The Great Canadian Talk Show.
It was only a couple of watts, but I brought the truth to everyone within three blocks of the west side of campus.
No way! Yes way!
And now, let's get right down to business with Marty Gold.
Welcome to the Great Canadian Talk Show podcast. This is episode 11 of season 4. I'm Marty Gold. We've certainly gotten a lot of attention from all sorts of directions right from the beginning of 2024 and the kickoff of season 4. This episode will be no different. Swinging back to the Crime Court's public safety update features that we regularly provide. And we're going to talk about a couple of cases in the news, one of which we're going to be bringing forward some additional information take a look at the mayhem that's happening on our streets and the galvanization of public opinion against it. People are getting motivated to actively pursue change, whether it's in the way police or emergency services respond to things, whether it's about the courts, whether it's about legislation. People are mad as hell and increasingly are deciding they aren't going to take it anymore. Before we swing into that, I do want to thank the new listeners, thank those of you that have been with us and continue to stay with us through our series. Our last podcast, the last one in January, 100 Days of WOB, remarkably popular. People were actually found it very interesting and confirming the opinion that and the findings that I put forward. A note from a listener: I had to listen to this, meaning the podcast, last night. It's funny because WOB put out a video in front of a gas station talking about the first 100 days, and his only point of substance was bringing down the price of gas. He did say, I watched the video, he did say, oh, we've, you know, done great things in healthcare. Aren't waiting times longer now than they were when he came in? But aside from reducing the gas tax, something that people visually, you know, see the benefits of because they can read numbers, generally speaking, not a lot of accomplishments. And at the present time, what do we have? Raising taxes, allowing school boards to raise school taxes, canceling the surgical programs. A lot of this is very negative for the public as Canoe's government stumbles from one file to the other trying to find some footing. And none of it at this stage, like more and more people are saying that what they foresee is a one-term government because this is going to be very much like the Alberta experience with Rachel Notley. Now, of course, part of that depends on how the Conservative Party can recover, because it seems unlikely that there'll be some new option on the political horizon, although I suppose you never know. But increasingly, people are seeing the lack of immediate change, the lack of immediate improvement, and attributing that to WOB Canoe and his cabinet. How should I put this? Just not ready, I think, is what was said in one political campaign. And it wasn't said in this one, but some people are suggesting that maybe it could have. You can check out that podcast, 100 Days of WOB, all our podcasts on actionline.ca, as well as the various articles under the blog section. You can use that tab. When I come back, I'm going to be diving into the Crime Court's public safety update. In particular, we're going to talk about about two things. I have more information with regards to the circumstances around the murder of Kyriakos Voyakis in West Winnipeg, the owner of the Cork and Flame restaurant. We're going to talk about the effects of random violence on an immigrant class that we're proud and actively bringing to Manitoba, and some of those people are rapidly finding out that friendly Manitoba, wonderful Winnipeg, it's a myth in the tourist brochures based on their experiences here with violent crime. I'll be back with more right after this.
The Crime Courts and Public Safety Update is sponsored by Jamrock Security. For your home, your family, your business, your employees, and for your community, Jamrock provides affordable protection solutions. Call 204-880-1564 or go online, jamrocksecurity.ca. Do security. Do it smart. Jamrock Security.
The Great Canadian Talk Show podcast is always listening to you. Send in your comments, story tips, and ideas to martygoldlive@gmail.com, TGCTS, making sure your voice is heard.
As I record this episode, it's February the 2nd, Groundhog Day, and just like the day before and the day before that and the day before that, the Winnipeg media continues to exclude important facts and details from stories that matter to you. There's allegations that a botched ambulance response helped seal the fate of restaurant owner Kyriakos Voyjakos. The mainstream media still hasn't told you. Ask yourself why. In episode 9, we provided the only extensive on-scene coverage with photos and audio from the vigil held Sunday night at the Cork and Flame restaurant on West Portage Avenue, including an interview with Don Woodstock, who, by way of reference, is the ongoing sponsor for the Crime Court Public Safety Update, but it turns out that his company provided security apparatus and security planning for the Cork and Flame, specifically, as he explained, because of problems with vagrants. And we heard from Mike Voyjakos and his concerns about the state of public safety, the revolving door justice system. Now, the media did pick up on that because Mike has been out there on that subject of the deterioration of public safety in Winnipeg. But one thing that he mentioned that has not been mentioned anywhere else is about the ambulance response. Now, what if this was your brother who had died under these circumstances? What would you do? You'd probably do what Mike is doing and what others are doing and speaking out. As our headline said, revolving door justice and an ambulance failure has been blamed in the Voyjakos murder. And there's going to be a problem upcoming because one story in the media claimed that the ambulance rushed the victim to hospital where he died. That's a neat way to reshuffle the facts. It could be that once the ambulance was loaded, that it then rushed to the wherever it went, Grace Hospital, I assume. Nearest hospital was like 3 minutes away. Maybe after the gurney got inside, it rushed. But before that rush, there is a wait longer than acceptable for an ambulance. And we have a witness. Mike has said this. But we have a witness who has chimed in on this subject, a staff member in our Facebook group. This staff member saying, I was working, and this is after someone, you know, people say all sorts of things. They type before they think. That happens. I'm guilty of it too. But one person said, oh, the staff should have done more. And I questioned them immediately, like, You mean the restaurant salary? What do you mean? What are you talking about? In response, the following was posted. I was the staff working that night. He was arriving to work, and we were inside working. Four seniors walked in the door to inform us of a fight in the parking lot and to call the Winnipeg Police Service. I called immediately, 3 seconds. And the other staff ran out immediately, 5 seconds. At that point in time, we found a male face down in a snowbank. We rolled him over to help, to then realize it was our boss slash our friend and our family. We, the staff, had to perform CPR and help him until the ambulance arrived 18 minutes later. 18 minutes, and this is a straight shot, pretty much, whether you're, you know, coming from eastbound on Portage Avenue, westbound on Portage Avenue. You're not ducking and diving around a bunch of narrow bays and, you know, coves. And this isn't like something that happened way up in Sage Creek. This is a 3100 block of Portage Avenue, 18 minutes, as his waitress said. So the staff should have done more. Please think before you write, because you have no idea what that day was like for us and how traumatized we still are from that day. At least one elected official that I'm aware of is following up on suggestions from the community that this needs to be formally inquired into. Now, what the staff member didn't mention, but that Mike Wojciechowski did at the vigil, is that a second ambulance had to be sent because the defibrillator on the first ambulance wasn't working. The Winnipeg media is silent about this. So there's two elements here. Number one, this extraordinary delay. Number two, an equipment failure. Now there's a third point I hesitate to raise at this time, but I will. If you get to the scene and the defibrillator isn't working for whatever reason, I'm told that there was defibrillators in two different buildings within a kilometer radius of the scene. I don't have enough details to precisely start second guessing everything, but there's a fire hall, I think, three blocks away that would have had one. And I believe it's a community center about a kilometer away. Now, as I said, I don't want to start second guessing should somebody have run off to another location to get it instead of calling a second ambulance and waiting for it. I don't have enough facts to really dissect that, but it is, I think, a question that will come into play. So now there's three questions. What took so damn long? Why didn't the defibrillator work? And why didn't somebody go and get one from a nearby building? And are the ambulance crews, the first responders, are they even, how do I put this, taught, trained, conditioned to think about where the nearest defibrillator is? Because I can tell you that in other professions connected to healthcare, it's drilled into them to be aware of where the nearest defibrillator is located. So, three open questions still to be dealt with. I'm including in the episode description a link to a video from a city hall meeting, it was a committee meeting, from October of 2019, where the fire chief admitted, and he was going back and forth with Kevin Klein at the time, the city councilor for that area, as a matter of fact, out in West Winnipeg. And Fire Chief Lane admitted that for the first time, they were queuing calls on a shift, direct quote, were queuing calls on a shift, which he had never seen before. Now, that was October 2019. That's about 4.5 years ago. Ask yourself, has things gotten better or worse with that ambulance response time? If it hasn't gotten better, why not? These are important questions because that's your family who could be next. Now, I'm going to tell you, I'm not an expert on these things, but I do have a lot of, you know, institutional knowledge. I'm blessed with the ability to think logically through things. I know what I know if you know what I mean. You have ambulances forever tied up with drug overdoses on our streets from caused by, in my estimation, various levels of government whose behaviors, instead of making drug use intolerable, and I'm speaking specifically of methamphetamine, not somebody smoking a joint waltzing down the street, otherwise minding their own business and not collapsing in a heap or lashing out in a psychosis, creating violence and mayhem around them. You've got ambulances tied up on those kinds of cases and those kinds of responses for those kinds of patients. Well, in this case, a restaurateur defending his property from a repeat trespasser died. And when you look again at the circumstances where this, the accused Curtis Delabozic, 12 prior convictions for violating court orders and yet released again by the court, even though he was found by psychiatric professionals to have an unspecified psychosis. And somehow the judge, and I apologize in advance if I mispronounce his name because I've asked around, S-L-O-U-G-H. I'm told it's pronounced Slow. He used to be a crown attorney, Donald Slow. If I got the pronunciation wrong, please let me know. I'm not mispronouncing it deliberately. But I don't think it's Slew. But he's a provincial court judge. He sends Delabozic to 12 months of supervised probation, which he breached the next day, and that probation included attending counseling, which evidently he didn't do. Instead, he's housed up at the Boulevard Motel next to the Cork and Flame. Now, I hate to speculate, how is his rent getting paid? Was his rent being paid by any kind of welfare program? Because it's got to be, I mean, a room at the Boulevard Motel, it's, what is it, $700 a month, $600 a month, $500 a month? It's got to be something. How is that rent being paid? Was it being paid by any kind of government program? At the same time as he was on the lam with a warrant out for his arrest? Free to create mayhem and kill an innocent man? Kevin Klein in the online pages of the Winnipeg Tribune pointing out elected officials were quick to offer their thoughts, prayers, and expressions of displeasure, but their words fell short of any meaningful commitment to address the growing concerns plaguing our city and province. No concrete action was promised. No immediate funding was allocated to apprehend individuals with outstanding warrants. That's a very good point. And he harkens back to the Olive Garden stabbing as well. In his editorial comments, Klein's editorial comments about this case. It would be baffling if it didn't seem almost deliberate that violent offenders are repeatedly allowed to circulate in the community to offend some more, be dragged into a cell for a day or two at best, and then the revolving door button gets hit and whoosh, out they go. And with regards to this incident, I'm told, because I've been asking around, people, it certainly hasn't been prominent in terms of politicians speaking out about this case. I'm told that Mayor Gillingham that the MLA, newly elected MLA, Oxenham, out in Kirkfield Park, and that Wob Kanoe expressed condolences of some form or another, perhaps on Twitter. I'm going to accept that at face value. I'm also going to accept at face value from asking around that apparently not one conservative MLA has said anything about this. The Liberal leader, Cindy Lamoureux, has not said anything about this. Not publicly, apparently. And it certainly seems that nobody wants to address that elephant in the room the way Mike Vojakis is. Bail reform, revolving door, sympathy for these drug-addicted criminals. Being propped up by a system that is clearly doing them no good. We'll continue to report on this case, and at the on the face of it, it appears we will continue to be the only outlet sounding the warning bell that a very flawed ambulance response may have sealed the fate of Kyriakos on January 24th. Back with more right after this.
Because of you, the Great Canadian Talk Show has made headlines for over 15 years and forced important issues to be acknowledged and dealt with.
The problem here is that they want everything their own way in every situation. It's unpalatable to the general public, but they're frozen out by the process.
There is no funding to pay the bills for holding the government accountable.
They just see money. Of course, it's your tax dollars, but it's being spent on their pet projects.
We're on your side.
A lot of these people in special interest groups, they don't bear any relationship to your life out there. They don't have any handle on what your reality is in your neighborhood.
Support old-fashioned investigative reporting that matters.
The best source of information is not the city councilor. It is this program and you listeners.
Support TGCTS today.
This episode of the Great Canadian Talk Show podcast is sponsored by Jamrock Security, protecting your family, your business, and your community. Call 204-880-1564 or go to jamrocksecurity.ca, your trusted security partner.
For your home renovation and repair needs, call PKP. For over 20 years, we've built trusted relationships in the North End, West Kildonan, Garden City, and the Maples. Buying a refurbished home? We'll do your pre-purchase inspection and make sure you get what you're paying for. Go to our Facebook page, PKP Renovations and Repairs, or call us 204-297-5446. That's 204-297-5446. PKP Renovations and Repairs.
A reminder, every episode of the Great Canadian Talk Show podcast, as well as special articles, interviews, we pick up, in particular, I'm proud to be able to pick up columns that are syndicated by individuals such as Dr. Raphael Medoff on the subject of anti-Semitism and the history of anti-Semitism and how that history is playing out in modern times before our eyes. That is under the blogs tab. You'll see hate crimes, and that's where we're slugging all the stories. And oh, yes, there will be an update about anti-Semitism in Winnipeg. I am the only reporter covering that in this market. And we're going to have another update. I anticipate news from the university campuses, as well as, once again, from the public school system. Information and situations that are unreported in the mainstream media. Why? I don't care, because they have no excuse not to cover these things. No viable excuse. They certainly have excuses, but no excuses that we're going to accept around here. So you can check out all our content, as well as you heard in that break. You can support this work, and we're going to be mounting an additional campaign and a bigger campaign in February, because, as we say, there's no funding to hold the government accountable. And unlike the major media outlets, what we do here is driven by your support, driven by your participation, driven by your tips, driven by your knowledge, and driven by our commitment to you. What does the word targeted mean to the Free Press and the police? This question comes up because of a headline about yet another violent late-night incident in the north end of Winnipeg. Although, to be fair, it's not the traditional confines of the north end, this one up by Keewatin and Burroughs. The headline reading, "Random Violence Targets Another Newcomer as Ukrainian Refugee Shot in Eye with Pellet During Robbery." I know there's a lot to deconstruct there in that story by Nicole Buffy in the pages of the Broadsheet newspaper. Random violence, but then says that violence targets another newcomer as Ukrainian refugee shot in the eye with a pellet, as in a pellet gun, during a robbery. Man and his wife were waiting for a bus around midnight on Wednesday, as in late Tuesday night, I believe it was. They're waiting at the bus stop at Burroughs and Gilbert. For those of you that are unfamiliar, there's the Manitoba, the old Manitoba housing projects, I assume it's still Manitoba housing. And there was a term used for it that I hesitate to use on modern podcasts, lest somebody accuse me of something, but is a particular neighborhood up in the projects around the 1415, 1600 block of Burroughs. There's a couple of side streets that cut through, and Gilbert is one of them. Not the... you didn't walk into those calls back 30 years ago when I drove cab with the greatest of confidence sometimes. It's kind of like the whole Flora Walk, Stella Walk, Lord Selkirk development, but further west, straight up Burroughs. They're waiting for a bus. Two boys try to jack them for their groceries. Apparently, they had a bag or two of groceries. The police saying that they had come from work and shopping. And these two kids get into a fight, and the man was shot in the face with a pellet gun. Now, as the newspaper puts it, the incident was described as a crime of opportunity that quickly escalated into violence. And Danny McKinnon, the constable who's the spokesperson on that day, said this was very random. The victims were taken aback. Well, okay, it's a crime of opportunity. It's random. So that doesn't mean that it's targeted then. I don't think. Now, people are noticing there's a repeated pattern of headlines with our Ukrainian friends, those who are refugees from the war with Russia, of which I believe I saw there's 25,000. And I'm telling you, when no matter what neighborhood you're in this city now that I go to, whether it's shopping malls in Transcona, whether it's around St. Boniface in the local Safeway, whether it's around Health Sciences Center at the No Frills, whether it's around Polo Park, whether it's like Bernstein's, I hear Ukrainian everywhere. Everywhere now. And it's not because some baba is talking to somebody. And look how well the Ukrainian refugees have integrated into our community. How many are opening catering services, restaurants, gainfully employed. And you'll notice they are well-dressed. They are well-mannered. You see, look, just go to a Walmart. Wait, you'll see. They have their phones out. They're comparing products. They're talking with somebody to make sure that they're buying the right thing as they get acclimated to Canadian consumer goods. They are trying to take care of themselves and contribute. And what is their reward as a community now? I'm talking about the refugees in particular. One almost stabbed to death at the Forks on Canada Day. One murdered at Talbot and Watt. And now this poor fellow, I'm told, losing an eye. And this is causing consternation, grief, and outrage, both among the refugees and their sponsors in the general community. What reassurance has Premier Canoe or Mayor Gillingham given to these communities that they will be safe in Winnipeg? They didn't come here to be murdered, stabbed, or shot. But increasingly, they're finding their own community members embroiled in headlines describing them being victims of either targeted crime or random crime. In the cases I've mentioned, all three appear to be random. What instruction, guidance, orientation is being given to Ukrainian refugees about where Winnipeg is or is not safe? Although, again, we're rapidly finding out there's no safe place. And it's not just for Ukrainian refugees, for all of us. But are they told at any point, do you think, you know, if you're going to be waiting for a bus around, you know, Burroughs and Keewatin after dark, you have to watch out for those 14-year-olds and 17-year-olds. You think they're told, watch out for these kids, both of whom were known to police? And in this case, I'll echo the cries of the mother whose daughter was murdered on Burroughs by somebody she knew late last year. Who are the parents? Who are the parents of these kids that shot a Ukrainian refugee in the face? Are we going to find out? You see how, in this case, the young offenders legislation has divorced families. You know, in the old days, for better or for worse, and I would submit it's for better, one of the things that motivated you as a kid not to screw up is that your father and your mother would let you have it like nobody's business. The grief of getting the family name into a news report, or even just known around the community, that motivated you to follow the straight and narrow. And when a group of people said, hey, we're going to go steal from the Merck's drugstore or something, kids would go, no, I'm not going to do that. Because they didn't want to get it from their parents. And yet we've seen over and over again in Winnipeg, in some cases with theft rings, where the parents are right in on it, where the kids are lookouts or the kids are bringing back the goods for the parents' defense. Now, do we believe that this 14-year-old, the 17-year-old, they were starving and they needed those groceries? Let's just steal a bag of groceries and, look at that. Some baking soda and some vanilla extract. I guess we'll bake a chocolate cake. But there's a bigger issue to this. What kind of society are we becoming? What has to be done to stop this? What do we do about elected officials and people in NGOs and government-funded agencies that are enabling this, that are coddling the criminals? They're making excuses for antisocial behavior. And just to be clear, it's not just, on the streets of Winnipeg, City Hall. And I'll be talking with Councillor Ross Eady. I'm scheduled to interview him on Monday. And I'll be talking with him about a variety of subjects, the city budget, and of course, the problems with crime and violence in Winnipeg. But I'll be talking with him about these concerns that city councillors have, that more and more tax dollars have to be spent on protecting them while you walk around vulnerable to attack. And I've left a message for Councillor Sherry Rollins, who's the big proponent for this. And I get it. When Councillor Luke said, well, the panic buttons don't work, I agree. If you're going to have panic buttons at the councillors' desks in their offices, they should work. I'm not going to nitpick all my way through this. But I want to understand what's going on in the minds of the councillors, what kind of incidents they're dealing with, whether it's happening to all councillors or only some councillors in terms of threats or fear or intimidation or whatever. But what does it say about the society that City Hall, that from the time I was I'm going back here. Probably the first time I walked inside City Hall, I was probably 17. I first made presentations at City Hall, and again, I'm estimating here, but certainly by 1986, because I have a video of me making a speech at council in 1986. So 84, 85, during the term of Bill Norrie, when Yoram Amizrahi, I'm sure he told me to take him to City Hall so he could, you know, check it out and see, you know, where the councilor's offices were and such things. When I was first dragged into the world of community activism and community reporting. And every step of the way, people who pose no threat to the administration, to councilors, to the clerks, more and more hoops to be able to get inside the building. And it's important that public access be maintained. And whereas city officials, I think it was Michael Jack said, he'd like to see metal detectors. Really? You want to start with those kind of lineups when people are trying to get into City Hall to watch a council meeting and hold their elected officials accountable? What kind of society are we becoming? And not just Winnipeg. Not just the streets of Winnipeg, not just City Hall. Very quickly, I'm going to pivot to Flin Flon, just to show I pay attention. You know, we're proud on Kick FM that we didn't demonstrate a severe case of perimeteritis, and I don't have it to this day, thank God. Take a look up in Flin Flon. In the last few days, a 24-year-old guy went to use his bank card on Main Street. They beat this guy up severely, punching and kicking. Five people were arrested. Look at this. Bravery comes in numbers. Five of them. Three were charged with robbery and aggravated assault. Two females, an 18-year-old and a 15-year-old. A 22-year-old charged with robbery and aggravated assault. Released from custody, it says, on a release order. A 22-year-old and a 15-year-old girl remained in custody. So you got, let's do the roll call. Two 22-year-olds, an 18-year-old, and two 15-year-olds. Three girls. Three teenage girls. Two 15-year-olds. Who were the parents? And if they were wards of CFS, how did that go sideways? All those CFS workers that may have had contact with these people, hey, any of these people have priors and the courts release them? We don't know from the scant report so far. That's in Flin Flon. Takes five people to jack a guy for his bank card and walk off laughing about it. And then released just today, a fellow 21-year-old, subject to a search warrant at 2 a.m. earlier this week. A gun, a machete. Dylan Baker, 21, charged with possession of a firearm when knowing possession is prohibited and possession of property obtained by crime. He doesn't get into court until March the 3rd. The RCMP seizes weapons and cash from a home in Flin Flon, and this guy doesn't see the inside of a courtroom for a month. See where things are broken? See where things aren't working? See why people have a justifiable fear for their own safety and wonder why public officials think that they're entitled to more protection at their place of work than the average citizen is trying to take a bus? We will continue to report on these cases. We will continue to ask the hard questions. I will continue to ask city councilors in particular for interviews to get them on the record, whether it's about public safety, whether it's about their own safety, whether it's about the city budget, whether it's about the bus system, the transit system, or all these other factors. I'll continue to hold them accountable. We are at a tipping point in terms of whether Winnipeg is going to turn into Detroit or not. How many people that move here move away? How many Ukrainian refugees are going to decide, you know, it's good there's a lot of Ukrainians here, Ukrainian history, the churches, but in terms of where to live here, where is it safe and where is it not? And maybe nowhere is safe enough for me and my family. People are going to start making those calculations. And I will continue to stand guard for them and for you and do our best to turn the tide, to stem the madness of perpetrators as victims and victims as oppressors and privileged, and find where the balance is. Because what we see going on now in our city, in our province, on our streets, again, I remind you from 100 Days of WAB, the last podcast, WAB Canoe talked a big game about taking on crime and taking on gangs in his election campaign. And just like improving healthcare, just like bail reform, just like making lives more affordable, just like recruiting nurses, it's looking like that's another big fat wobby lie. We're going to continue to be here to fight for you. Interview with Councillor Rossiti coming next week. Math is hard for lefties. It's going to be a big piece about the state of math education in Manitoba. And that's going to be coming down the pike in February. Your questions, comments, news tips, welcome. MartyGoldLive@gmail.com. We'll kick off our new fundraising campaign next week, I hope. And I hope we'll finally be able to get all the work done on it. We're going to continue to prove to you that we deserve your support and that your support for the work that's being done here is integral to making sure that you have a watchdog, because we never forget that you have the power.
Whether you're concerned,
rush hour, people can't get home in this city,
angry or motivated,
which he hasn't mentioned anything about and didn't do anything about when he was in charge, because that's a small stuff.
Actionline.ca, letting you know you have the power.
It didn't matter if they're NDP, Liberal, Conservative. They'd say, well, that's really expensive. I'd say, yeah, you know what else is expensive? Firefighters, water.
Home of the Great Canadian Talk Show.
The point of uselessness when he wielded influence around the halls of 510 Main Street.
With Marty Gold.
Thanks for listening to The Great Canadian Talk Show. If you want to email Marty, send it to tgcts1@gmail.com or follow him on Twitter @tgcts.